A Matter of Spirit is a quarterly justice journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. This article appeared in the winter 2018 issue on New Monasticism. Healing Hands by John Marquez. John Marquez was a Trappist monk at the Abbey of New Clairvaux in Vina, California from 1995 to 2003. Since 2010, he has worked as sacristan at St. James Cathedral in Seattle, Washington. In 1995, when I was just shy of 27, I joined the Trappists. The Order of Cistercians of the Strict Observance, as they are more formally known, is a Catholic monastic order founded at the end of the 11th century. The monasteries of the order, houses of men or women religious, are self-contained entities with limited outside contact, supporting themselves with work, seeking God in contemplative silence, solitude, and humble service to the brothers or sisters according to the 6th century rule of Saint Benedict. When I entered the monastery as an idealistic young man, I knew that private, solitary prayer was a significant part of the monastic charism. I also knew that communal prayer, the recitation of psalms at set times of the day and the celebration of the Eucharist, was part of the life. But I had to learn by experience how the two, solitary and communal prayer, fed each other and were of equal importance. Moreover, I had yet to learn how all of that prayer flowed into the loving service of my brother monks, and how that service, in turn, nourished my prayer. I quickly discovered that trying to pray in the monastery was not always as easy or consoling as I expected it to be. With no television or radio, limited phone and internet use, external stimuli were kept to a minimum. This was a great boon to the life of prayer, but it also amplified the clamor of my thoughts, so many of which tended towards negative judgments, trivial preoccupations, dwelling on the past, grumbling, and a general resistance to the movements of grace. It wasn't always so, and I had many moments of deep prayer and the profound sense of God's closeness, but usually the biggest obstacle to those moments was my own wandering mind. The clear and undistracted realization of my own sinfulness, too, could weigh down my heart and drive prayer far away. However, more often than not, it served as an impetus to prayer and helped me to see my need for grace. Carrying that realization of my own weakness to communal prayer, I found reassurance and healing. Singing Psalm 51, for instance, "Have mercy on me, God, in your kindness. In your compassion, blot out my offense." Or hearing the reading of the gospel parable of the prodigal son, or even the sight and presence of my brother monks in choir, who I knew had to be going through the same struggles and discouragements, all of that filled me with wonder at God's never-failing mercy. Apart from the difficult moments in private prayer, its joys and solace also led me to communal prayer with renewed gratitude and fervor, and the words of the liturgy often found their way into my private prayer. While I experienced private and communal prayer to be intimately linked, I also discovered that the life of prayer was connected to loving service of the other monks, both in the ordinary course of daily tasks and in the more extraordinary case of the sick and dying. It was this latter experience, accompanying one of the monks in the last stages of his life, that was to give me a startlingly clear glimpse of the truth, that we serve Christ in our brothers and sisters. Brother Paul Bernard was a community organist, a quiet, faithful, and kind monk who, I think, everyone had a soft spot for. In February 2001, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, an aggressive and fast-acting form of cancer. We all knew including Brother Paul, that he didn't have long to live. And in fact, he died about a month after his diagnosis. During that month, we cared for him, ourselves, in the community infirmary, in a tremendous outpouring of love. I was one of the monks charged with the bulk of his care. Since the pancreas regulates blood sugar levels, I had to take blood samples from his fingertips a few times a day, and, if his blood sugar was too high, give him insulin injections. Sometimes it was hard getting a sufficient amount of blood from his fingers, and then I would have to massage his hands for several minutes to get the blood flowing. This became an increasingly frequent occurrence as the month wore on. Brother Paul died early on a Sunday morning, and later that evening, I came across a photo of him playing the organ. His hands were clearly in view on the keyboard, and as I gazed at the picture, I was struck by them. I recognized those hands. I had massaged them numerous times for a month. Suddenly, that connection to another human being through the fragile beauty of the body opened out into the realization that through Brother Paul, through his body, I had been caring for Jesus. I knew it intellectually all along, but was only in that moment after Brother Paul's death that I knew in my heart the truth of Jesus' parable. I was ill and you cared for me. Whatever you did for one of these least brothers or sisters of mine, you did for me. I left the monastery at the end of 2003. I came to the conclusion that the lifestyle was a little too insular for me. I needed more contact with the outside world. I still believe that the monastic life is a noble calling, and the lessons I learned about the importance of prayer, both private and communal, and service, and how they are all connected on the broad spectrum of Christian discipleship, have stayed with me to this day.